Thanks for participating in DWHSA's Certified Destination Wedding Ceremony Planner Program. Today, we're diving into the details, the nitty-gritty parts of putting a destination wedding ceremony together. And as we do that, we have to start with your new role. Already, you're working with your couples as the travel advisor. You're doing all the reservations. You're collecting final payments and so on. But you're going to have a new hat to wear now. You're going to be the couple's ceremony planner. What does that mean? You're going to be holding the hands of your couples and in many cases actually doing the task of putting their ceremonies together. Usually that means a spectrum as you work with different couples. You're going to have some couples on one side of the spectrum who really just need a BFF. They need that best friend forever, who's going to hold their hand, look at their pictures, tell them what you've seen other couples do, give them advice and opinions, but they're going to be working with the suppliers, the vendors, the on-site coordinators directly, talking about and finalizing the different elements of their ceremonies. They're going to be doing the work. On the other end of the spectrum, you're going to be doing the work, hopefully getting a bigger fee perhaps for that, where you're going to be advising, talking to your couples, getting their dreams down on paper, but then you're also going to be the one talking to the vendors, the on-site coordinators, putting those elements, the pieces of the ceremony together. No matter where you fall on that spectrum, you are now going to be the certified ceremony planner for your couples. And again, hopefully considering charging fees for doing that above and beyond your travel fees. This also means you're going to be wearing that ceremony planner hat, working with the suppliers. There's a reason why those on-site employees at the resort or on the ship are called wedding coordinators, because technically, legally, they're not the planners for the couples. They work for the suppliers, and their job is to make sure the ceremonies go off without a hitch to benefit the suppliers. So from now on, you're going to be the planner for the couples. You're stepping into the picture now, and that's how you're going to liaise with those suppliers. This actually becomes a big selling point for your couples, especially if you plan to charge service and planning fees to be the ceremony planner. Because you could tell your couples, look, from this point on, I am your ceremony planner. Now, let's jump into those details. There's so many of these, in fact, that we split this class into two parts. But it all starts with getting the dreams, the ideas, the wants and desires of the couple for their ceremony out of their heads and down on paper in a fixed form. Now, you can do this literally on paper. You can have a meeting with your couple. You can go to this coffee shop. You can get on Zoom with them. Talk to them about what they want from music, decor, and seating charts and at the reception. And you can make a list in the old-fashioned way, and there's nothing wrong with that. But one tool you might think about using is a vision board. Now, don't get scared. This is a really easy thing to work on. What you're really doing is, again, having a conversation with your couples, a consultation, really, and you're getting down what colors they want, what decor they want, what flowers they've thought about, what music they've thought about, what they want to say in their vows. You're getting all these details collected from them and putting it down in a fixed form. Instead of a legal pad, it's going to be something like an online display where you're showing the colors they've talked about having in their ceremony and the music they wanted to have and the types of flowers and so on. The best way to start that conversation is just to get them talking to you. And you can do that by asking them a bunch of questions. Where did they meet? How did they meet? Get them talking about how their relationship started. What are the favorite things they like to do as a couple? That might help you envision the type of ceremony they're going to want. What do they want their guests to walk out of the ceremony feeling as they're going over to the reception? A year after the ceremony, what are some of the memories they as a couple want to have from the ceremony? So it's questions like that really that are designed to get them talking to you. And as they do, then you can start moving into what type of music have you thought about for the ceremony and the reception? What officiant, who do you want to officiate your ceremony? Those nitty-gritty questions are going to get better answers for you if you start them off just in the conversation, getting them telling you how they met, what kind of feel they want their guests to have, and that leads into those specifics. Now, as you're asking these questions, again, you're going to move them from the touchy-feely questions into the specific questions. And we'll talk in a few minutes here in the different areas, the components of the ceremony itself. You can use the legal pad, but there are online ways to put these ideas down on, quote, paper. Pinterest, putting a Pinterest board together is a great way to do it. But you can have a free or a paid account at Canva, that tool that a lot of us use for graphic design for our businesses. They have on Canva wedding vision board designs, layouts that are free for you to use, or if you have a paid account, of course, and I'll show you a screenshot of one in just a minute. Whatever you do, you want to gather images, ideas, inspiration, text of what they thought about for their ceremonies. Because later you're going to refer back to that as you're putting together the actual pieces of the ceremony. Let me give you one more free tool. Rebecca Grinnells has taught for us at past DWHA conferences. She's known as the co-founder of Disney's Fairy Tale Weddings program. Think about how big weddings are at Disney these days. Rebecca and a co-worker started that years ago. And now she's left Disney and she runs the Engage Retreats for luxury, super upscale wedding planners. And she taught us in the classes she did for us a tool called the Three Colors, Four Adjectives formula. When she was doing a consultation with a couple, she would tell them, please think about this, brainstorm for a few minutes, and then come back to me and tell me, describing your perfect wedding, what would be three colors and four adjectives to describe your dream wedding? And the couples would sometimes come back to her and say, okay, our colors would be silver, black, and white. And the adjectives would be elegant, upscale, rich, and something else. I'm not very good at this, but you get the idea. As opposed to another couple that would come back and say, okay, our colors are tan, blue, and light gray, like creamy gray. And the adjectives would be natural, breezy, light, and something else. So, the silver, white, and black couple, that's going to be a very elegant wedding package. If you were looking at a resort company's wedding packages and the different colors and fabrics that could be selected in sandals, wedding packages, you would want to go with one of their packages that was more elegant and definitely upscale. Probably would be an indoor ceremony. Nothing about silver, white, black screams beachy. Whereas the other couple sounds like a beach to me, right? You get the idea of how you could use this tool, asking this question, to get a better feel for what your couple would really want for their ceremony. Now, this is a screenshot of one of Canva's wedding vision board designs. It's already laid out for you. You're just going to type in text and pull in colors. You know how Canva works, but you get the idea. It's already done for you. So, this is a great idea to really look professional with your clients. Now let's jump off the cliff here. Hold hands. We're going to jump off the cliff and get into the pieces of a typical destitute wedding ceremony, starting with the when. You've already probably answered The big where question, because you picked the destination, you know what resort you're going to or the ship the couple's going to be on. But now let's nail down the when for the ceremony. And it can't be as simple as the couple saying, oh, we've already talked. It's July, a Saturday in July in 2026, a year from now. Well, we're in October 2025 recording this. So there are a lot of other factors that would go into picking the date and time, starting with the availability. Again, we're in the fall of 2025. They're looking at Saturdays in July 26. I'm sorry to tell them, but if it's a popular resort, every Saturday 9 months from now may be long gone. So your first step is when you're talking and having this conversation with them, take the notes about the dates they're looking at, but you're going to want to check with the suppliers specifically to see if Saturdays are still available. Dates that have some significance for the couple. Did they want to get married on the anniversary of their first date as a couple? That's awesome. But again, is it going to be available? But also, then, significance for any of their VIP guests or the dates they've picked. How are those dates going to affect the guests they're inviting? If the bride's grandmother is paying for her granddaughter's wedding expenses, does the couple want to make sure that they picked a date that the grandmother can actually make it on the trip? How is the chosen date going to affect their guest? For example, there's a big trend that's been going on a few years now called the wedding week, where it's not just a weekend for the destination wedding. The couple will want their guests to take the whole week off. Sounds great if the guests are independently wealthy, but many of the guests will have family obligations. They have these things called jobs. So maybe that date spread that the couples picked will not work for a lot of their guests. So the impact of their chosen date on their guest in the real world. Days of the week. Again, many couples do want the Friday dates, the Saturday dates, but there's also a trend nowadays for midweek dates because sometimes those are easier to get at the more popular resorts. Seasons of the year. Is there a better time to be in the tropics than July and August? Hurricane season, June 1 to November 30th, might affect the selection of the dates. Holidays, not just holidays back home in the USA and Canada, but specific holiday dates in the destination in Jamaica, for example, or in Mexico, that might conflict with the dates the couple's chosen. And then just busy periods of the year, believe it or not, in the US South, college football season weekends could be really bad, depending on where the couple and their guests are coming from. So those are just a checklist of factors that you'll want to talk to your couples about in nailing down the when for the ceremony. As far as the time of day, 12 noon, sunset, you want to think about how that's going to affect the physical part of the ceremony, like lighting for photos, as well as just the feel for the guests as they're sitting there. If it's 12 noon, on a July Saturday, what's that going to feel like in Cancun? Pretty hot, pretty humid. So your couple may not be thinking about these things. So when you get the when chosen, you want to be more specific about the where. You know the big where, the destination and the resort or the ship, but now the really specific where, the venue for the ceremony, where the vows will actually take place. And with a typical resort, there are, as you know, many options. There are beach locations. It could be literally on the sand at the on the beach, or it could be a structure that's been built on the beach, like a gazebo. Crystal resorts have what they call the Seven Columns locations right by the beach. It's literally seven stone pillars that have a really dramatic backdrop. So, on the sand or in a structure that's on the beach or right by the beach. Other outdoor venues. Many resorts have beautiful garden areas. They could be wide open gardens, like lawn spaces, or they could be surrounded by higher hedges where they're kind of hidden away from the rest of the guests. Lots of options for resorts on for patios and terraces that just, again, are beautiful locations. Indoor locations, if it's on a ship, of course, we'll talk about that in a moment, but indoor venues at the resorts, ballrooms, chapels, even repurposed specialty restaurants that are just beautifully built. And then the rooftop terraces and lounges have really gotten fancy these days. And they can, you know, just have a beautiful view of the surrounding ocean or the mountains. Every resort's going to be different. On some of those are really dedicated areas on the cruise ships. So they are, there are chapels that are only used for worship services and weddings. But then there are libraries, which can be done over and closed to the other guests, repurposed for weddings. Some of the specialty dining restaurants can be great backdrops if they're closed off, of course, private deck areas. And then don't forget, of course, off-ship venues. Once the ship pulls into port, if you work with a local destination management company, DMC, there are lots of options that way. Now, you want to check with the suppliers to confirm how many ceremonies take place in a given day. There's a big trend these days to go back to having only one ceremony a day with these suppliers. But then there are the larger cruise ships with the major brands, the Carnivals and Royal Caribbeans, where there might be several ceremonies taking place in a day. How this affects the venue choice is, where are those other ceremonies booked for that same date that your couples picked? Where are those ceremonies taking place? Are they within the line of sight of your couples? If so, then you're going to want to maybe look at other options. So some other questions to think about: the layout of the venue. How big is the area? If your couple has a wedding design, like they want seating that's very spread out, or they want like a harpist as part of the ceremony, is there room for all of that? And then again, think about the ceremony location, how it's going to affect your guests. For example, are they going to have to walk down a path to get from the main resort down to the beach? And how's that going to affect guests who might be older or might have mobility issues to get down to the ceremony location on the beach? Plan B is always a huge question, picking that venue. Bad weather. Something's happening at the resort next door that is loud. There's something going on the water that's going to affect the noise level. What are the plan B options if something happens on the day of the ceremony makes the plan A choice not usable? And it doesn't hurt to have a plan C in the back pocket too. And then also just any details about the rules and restrictions that would affect the use of the venue. Are there noise level restrictions after the ceremony can't take place after dark? Something that comes up with South Asian ceremonies that might, the couple might want to do indoors. There are some resorts that don't allow open flames, fire. And part of the ceremony for many South Asian, not all, but many South Asian ceremonies involves having a little fire element that's part of the ceremony. Is that going to be possible indoors at that resort? Okay, now let's talk about the pieces of the ceremony. What happens first, second, third? We're going to talk in a moment about the fact that with destination wedding ceremonies, there's a lot more flexibility with A, B, C, D, what happens in the order of the ceremony. Your couples can be free and flexible to change that around. But here's the typical traditional timeline. And Lisa covered a lot of this in her class, but just going to go through it super quickly here. It's what you see in a typical wedding. The processional, again, there's flexibility here. There are many destination weddings where everybody just kind of gathers. There's no processional. There's no walking down the aisle. Everybody's just kind of there. It depends on the feel that your couple will want for their ceremony. But for you, as you practice, you know, your professional practice of being a certified ceremony planner, this is a good place to start. And then let your couples customize this as they wish. And you can see areas where they can customize the unity ceremony. Sometimes it's left out entirely. Sometimes it's very customized. The mixing sand in a bowl could be they're from an they both came from two competing colleges, and they met. They have a funny story about how they met, and so the color of the sand they're going to mix, it's their school colors from the two competing schools. It's as the last paragraph says here, this is totally flexible with destination weddings. This isn't going to be done, the ceremony, in a hometown church where the preacher is really strict on what happens during the ceremony. Not at all with most destination wedding ceremonies, unless it's a religiously compliant ceremony like a Jewish ceremony, or especially a Catholic ceremony, where everything is prescribed. Here, it can be really open. So use this outline to start the conversation with your couples and make it clear they can take a Sharpie and cross off things and write in new things they want to do. Nobody cares as long as they're happy and their guests are happy. Now, let's talk about the resort or the ship, the supplier's packages. There are already laid out design packages just about every resort, every cruise line is going to offer to you. And we'll talk in a minute about how you can possibly customize those things. But typically, here's what's included in the basic ceremony packages. And you've got this in your slides. You've got this to refer to. Use this as you are breaking down and looking at what is included in the resort suppliers, the cruise line suppliers you are working with, your preferreds. Usually, it's going to include somebody who's coordinating this. That on-site coordinator, someone who's leading the ceremony as the officiant, the actual wedding location, the basic decor, and typically that is chairs for the guests to sit in, basic flowers, or it might be no flowers, depending on the supplier, and the focal point for the ceremony, the arch, the altar where the officiant and the couple will be standing in front of. For flowers, it could be as simple as the bouquet for the bride and the boutonniere for the groom, or if it's a same-sex couple, of course, it'll be two of the same. The sound system, which can be literally a microphone and speaker for the officiant and the couple to be heard by the guest, and no music. It could be basic recorded music. Every package will be different, but this will give you a checklist. This slide and the next slide give you a checklist of things to look for and ask about. So the basic package, many suppliers will offer a free package, and it is basic. And it's available to the couple for free, usually if they get a minimum number of room nights in their booking. Now, these packages then go up from there. There will be higher level of packages, and usually they're quoted on a per person rate. So a lot of the packages will be up to, it'll be $999 up to 10 people, up to 20 people. And then if your couple will have 40 guests expected, then they can add on the extra 10 or 20 people on a per person charge. That's typically how most suppliers work with these packages. The free or basic level, higher level of packages, and it can go way up beyond that. The key with the packages is you, as the ceremony planner, the agent, really, reading the fine print. There's a lot of creative language that goes into describing what's included in the package. And the famous example I use is with cruise packages. They're notorious for saying they're going to, the package includes the services of a photographer. And it means literally that, not even the first picture. It is the photographer being there to take pictures, and then every picture the couple will want is part of the kit they're going to pay for, the photography package they're going to buy, separate, above, and beyond the package for the ceremony itself. And there are other examples, sparkling wine versus champagne with a big C, capital C. Just check for things like that. Now, as far as customizing and adding those packages, some suppliers are strict and they say what's included in our packages A, B, and C That's what you get. There's no customizing. But many, many suppliers nowadays will let you add on, change things in the packages. And that's part of your our job as certified ceremony planners to talk with the suppliers, see how much wiggle room there is. If the bridal bouquet includes these specific flowers, one of which is roses, and the bride does not want any roses, can those be taken out? Can they be substituted at no charge? Can they be substituted at an add-on charge? Again, our job as the ceremony planner is going to be getting in the middle of that conversation and making sure that what the couple won't want is customizable, either for free or for add-on charges. So, best advice here, get the package details. And usually it's a PDF from the supplier. Or if they're using outside vendors that the supplier itself is using, it's the supplier's job then to get you the written details. What's in the breakdown of what's included in the packages and what the pricing is, and then what the extra charge would be to add on or to substitute anything. Now, beyond the packages, a big trend in the last 5 years, especially coming out of COVID, has been the prevalence of add-on service lists. So your on-site coordinator will come back to you and say, here are the packages, but we have other things we can add on. And it's usually the more upscale, expensive things. These are the larger dance floors, the photo booths, the cigar rolling stations, the beach fireworks displays. Pretty much the sky's the limit as long as it's legal to do it. Many of the suppliers who do a ton of destination weddings have big add-on services lists. They keep these lists close to their vest. The on-site coordinators will fight to even give you a list, but you're going to have to really insist on getting a list that you can show your couple. And they'll give it to you. They just like to keep these secret, but they'll give it to you, especially if you say, we can't buy anything if you don't give us the list. So make sure you get a fixed written, it's a PDF copy of the list that you can go over with your couple and then give them advice about what they want to add on. This brings us to outside vendors, off-site vendors. Obviously, what the services included in the basic packages or providing the add-on services list, a lot of those are in-house employees or contractors that the supplier company, they control, they have picked, they've negotiated the pricing for. So you've got those options. But there are companies off-site from the resort or off the ship that can also provide the same services. And the best example is photography. Your resort, for example, is going to have an in-house person who's the photographer, or they've got a contractor photographer in the destination that they love working with, and that's the one they recommend for the destination wedding photos. But your couple might look at the examples that the resort gives that the photographer can do for a wedding couple, and they may hate the style of that in-house photographer. So there are off-site photographers that you can find. The couple can bring a photographer from back home who does destination wedding photography. So there are off-site or outside vendors that can be used. So the first thing to ask about is what are the fees the supplier might charge? Resorts especially are notorious for charging hefty fees, $1,000, $500, $1,500 for each off-site vendor. And that's not for the photography services. That's the fee you're going to pay the resort for the permission to bring in your own photographer. So you're going to pay the offsite photographer plus $1,000 to the resort just for permission to bring that offsite photographer on site. So ask about any other restrictions. Sometimes in the local destination, there might be work permits that the offsite photographer has to secure to be permitted legally to take pictures at the couple's wedding. So you have to ask about the supplier's rules and restrictions for outside vendors, And the supplier should also be able to tell you what are the local destination work permits and rules for a vendor to come in from outside the destination to work the wedding. You've probably dealt with this already if you've done any destination weddings, but if you've never done a destination wedding yet, keep in mind this is how it works. There are some resorts that actually completely ban the use of outside vendors, so be aware of that. Have a conversation early on with the supplier about what these rules are. With cruise weddings, it can be really difficult to bring an outside vendor onto the vessel. Just be aware of that. It can be done, but it can be tricky. And then you just want to make sure you learn what these rules are. And then beyond that, you might actually have to help your couples find these off-site vendors. So great ways to do that is, ironically, going to the on-site coordinators and saying, "We don't want your in-house vendor, no offense, your in-house photographer. Do you know any other local wedding photographers who are well known?" And honestly, many on-site coordinators do, and they're glad to recommend somebody. You can also Google that, of course, go through the local tourism office to ask for recommendations, or go back to our Facebook group. Say, "Does anyone know a violinist in Playa del Carmen who can come over to this resort and work a destination wedding?" You'll be surprised how many members who've had that same search they've done on their own, and they'll recommend somebody. Now let's talk officiants, the person running the ceremony and administering the vows. If it's a lawfully binding ceremony, if your couple's insisting on getting legally married in that destination, then that officiant has to be someone who's legally approved to do binding ceremonies there. Your supplier can find that person, and it's usually a judge, a justice of the peace, or an approved minister who's legally approved to do ceremonies like that. If it has to be a religiously compliant ceremony, like a Catholic ceremony, then we've got a whole webinar that tells you more about that. But that person's going to be approved by that faith. And typically, and then the ceremony cannot be legally binding. Just another wrinkle there. But if it's symbolic, which we hope 90% of the ceremonies are for destination weddings, then it can be almost anybody. You've got the flexibility for it to be a family member, the pastor from the hometown church who doesn't have to worry about being legally approved to do a lawful ceremony in Cancun. It can be just the childhood pastors coming along to do the symbolic ceremony. If you need to find a lawfully approved officiant, again, your supplier is the first place to go there. If you have to find someone offsite, ask about their credentials, really confirm that they are licensed to do that legal ceremony. And again, usually it's a justice of the peace or a judge who can do that. If it is someone like a family member who's going to conduct the ceremony, you do want to gently ask the couple, "Are you sure they know they're going to be serious in doing the ceremony?" You don't want it to be a joke. One of the best ways to help them prepare is to just ask the couple to encourage that family member or friend who's going to do the ceremony to get ordained online. And there are two sources here that are very affordable, and there's a little bit of training, so at least it will be a serious ceremony. Now let's talk decor. The big advantage of doing a destination wedding is, especially if it's an outdoor ceremony, that the beach, the sun, the ocean, the mountains, the greenery around the resort, the view off the ship, that's the decor. The destination is the decor. So there's not a lot of extra stuff that's needed. They might want a few extra flowers, like a centerpiece for the altar. They might want an arch or a canopy they can stand in front of, but that can be all they need, really. Now, I know if you've done destination weddings already, you're probably laughing at me saying that because you've worked with couples that came in with, they have $5,000, $10,000 with extra decor they want, and that's okay. If they've got the budget, they can throw on all the extras with the scenic background. That's their prerogative. But start the conversation with a couple by just reminding them that's why they've picked the destination for the wedding. Beyond that, the resort or the ship is typically in the basic package going to provide the basics. Chairs for everybody to sit in. There'll be basic chairs, no chair backs or covers, typically. There might be an arch or a canopy or an altar, which is basically a table for them to stand in front of. And then the couple can add extras like covers, fabric covers for the chairs, an aisle runner, like fabric down the aisle, things like that. There are other basics they might want, like signage. So they might want a sign. If the ceremony is going to be on the beach, they might want a sign pointing everybody that this is where the Smith-Jones wedding is. Beyond that, as you might imagine, decor for Desi's wedding, the sky's the limit and their budget's the limit, however much they can afford. But the only extra decor they might really, really need is lighting. If it's going to be an outdoor wedding and it's at sunset, but the last half of the ceremony is going to be as the sun is setting, they might want to think ahead and have some lighting there, especially as guests are walking away from the ceremony to the reception. If they have to climb back up a pathway to get back to the main resort, having some lighting in place there as the sun can finishes setting might be smart. Now they might have, and again, beyond that, I won't get into more details because you're going to work with the supplier coordinator if the couple wants a disco ball and other decor like that. If it's an indoor ceremony, they might really want to amp up the decor, and you're just going to have to work with the add-on services list or pick a higher level package where some of the extra decor is included. There might be sentimental things that they want to bring. There might be a family Bible they want their vows set on. They might want a guest book, which many people want with their weddings. So anything like that, they might want to carry with them if they don't want to, if it's sentimental for them, or something like a guest book, they might want to pick their own at home through a supplier instead of buying it through the resort. Anything that's truly irreplaceable, like that family Bible, they do need to carry in their carry-on luggage. And if it's really valuable, it should be insured. And then sometimes couples will read all the bridal magazines and they'll come to you and say, "Oh, we saw that this other couple on this wedding website did paper lanterns that they bought through this supplier and they packed it in their luggage and brought it with them." They got frames for things like family photos that they want to throw around at the reception on different tables. If they want to go that extra mile, it pays to actually have the conversation with them. How much effort do they, as the couple, want to put into stuff like that when their real focus is the worry of the stress of getting married? Do they also want to be the decorator? If they do, just remind them that if they don't carry that with them in their luggage, and even if they do, they want to make sure that that is labeled clearly as wedding, personal wedding items or gifts. And they might even want to label it, "This is not merchandise." If they come through customs, there's a chance in destinations like Mexico that customs agents might see that as like they're bringing that merchandise in to sell, and they're going to have customs taxes and duties imposed on them. So just make sure, especially if they ship it ahead, inside the box and labeled outside the box, it needs to clearly say, "This is not merchandise. This is personal items for a wedding." All right. We've come to the end of part one. Thank you for hanging in here. Next part, we're going to get into more nitty-gritty: flowers, music, photography, videography, and the like.